Thanks again, very much, Brad. Helped us open the meeting, and I'll take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Warm welcome to any visitors with us tonight, and a massive welcome to anyone that's new to Narcotics Anonymous that's with us this evening. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So I'm delighted to say we do have a speaker tonight. They're one of our group members. They just celebrated a major milestone in their recovery. And I'm actually going to hand you over to Hill Murray to introduce them because I know she's known him a long time. So Hill Murray, over to you.
Oh, well, thank you, Steve. I didn't expect that. I'm an addict. My name is Hill Murray. And yes,
Hill Murray.
hi, Hill Murray.
hi, everybody. Hello. And yes, I have known Dale for about 24 years or so. I'm not yet dead sure. And he really helped me so much when I was part of meeting by mail and sending me share tapes, sharing the message of recovery, you know, that any addict can stay clean, lose the desire to use, and find a new way of living. And yeah, I think he's wonderful. Not to blow his trumpet, but in a way, that is my opinion. And I gladly hand you over to Dale, who's come to share. He celebrated 27. Oh, let him tell you about that. I'm glad to hand over to Dale to share his strength, hope, and experience. Strength, experience, and hope with us today. Thank you so much. Okay, over to you, Dale. Thank you.
Thanks, Maureen.
Thank you. Thank you. My name's Dale and I'm an addict and thank you God for a day
Hi,
clean.
Dale.
Hello.
Hello.
So I'm just going to just take a moment's silence just to ground myself and remember why we're here. Thank you. Yeah, I still get very frightened sharing. I don't share very often. This is the second share I've done in 7 years. I did one this time last year. And that's it. I think, you know, clean time anniversary is always a pause for reflection. And, you know, as a Hilmer said, I'm 20, celebrating 27 years clean. This week, all of it in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I got clean. I came to NA. I got clean. I picked up one white keyring, and I stayed clean. And I bought a copy of the basic text very early on, a fifth edition. And in the book, it said at the beginning, it said, "This book is dedicated to informing every addict that just for today, you never have to use again." And not only did I read it, but I believed it. You know, I saw the proof of the people in NA who got clean and were staying clean, and you know they told me that this could be done, and so yeah, I've just come to NA from day one, and you know there's some stuff in, you know, why are we here? And I've got the reading here. You know, before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life without the use of drugs. No, without, sorry, I've got that wrong. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different. We thought we'd found it in drugs. We placed the use ahead of the welfare of our families, our husbands, wives, families, etc. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. And, you know, cunning enemy of life. And, you know, when I first came to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, I came here because the drugs wiped the floor with me. You know, they had me on the verge of death. And it was a matter of weeks, months, you know, I had left to live when I finally found the room to Narcotics Anonymous. And I just thought it'd be a simple matter of just getting clean and going off into the sunset. But when I first got here, and you know, it said about addiction, you know, our first step, and I love our first step. It is not substance specific. Our first step says we admitted we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives have become unmanageable. And our addiction is just all encompassing, you know. And I realized that I've had the disease of addiction from being a child, and that, you know, all my feelings and actions were fear based, and they were all based in sort of like what we call defects of character. And you know, I was in it from day one, my earliest memories, and you know, completely powerless. And, you know, I could not change those thoughts. I had no way of, you know, I couldn't even process them. I didn't even know. So, you know, when the drugs came along, you know, I used drugs, and somehow everything just felt all right. And you know, now that it was a complete illusion, you know, it was honey to get me into the snare. You know, it wasn't based in reality. But you know, for a while they quote unquote worked, and and I often think about our first step as well. You know, a lot of 12-step fellowships are substance specific, and we're not. You know, no, nowhere does it say we're powerless over drugs. You know, we're powerless over that destructive, violent power. It describes it in our basic text that drives us to do things against our will and to trick us into using and pretending it's great and all this sort of stuff. That, you know, the cunning enemy of life that little bit of the reading just spoke about. So, you know, I was, you know, I'm not an addict because I use drugs. I'm an addict because I couldn't stop, and it didn't matter what I used. I just used ridiculous amounts of it, and I couldn't stop. So, you know, you will never hear me mention the specific drugs I use because, you know, we say at the beginning of these meetings, look for the similarities and not the differences. And, you know, I believe that when we identify the drugs, which is completely unnecessary, you know, we have the ability to create differences. And I just wanted to say, I put a thing in the chat actually, because it's gonna really alter what I share. I just asked, is there anyone? And obviously I know a lot of people in this meeting, but is there anybody in this meeting who's in the first 90 days? Because it's going to alter what I say. So if you are, and you could answer that question in the chat, I'll it'll allow me to sort of like backtrack and talk about some other things. But yeah, you know, we did many people great harm, but most of all we harmed ourselves, you know. And I'm not what I don't not one of these people in NA, you know, and everybody has their own thing. And you know, some people say they really enjoyed it and they're using, and they felt like they were being denied something. You know, I just think it was all a big, you know, it was a big ruse. It was false. It was fake. I was deceived. My addiction deceived me. I think now about using, I think it is fucking subhuman. It's disgusting, you know. And I can still smell the fear. I get the smell of it, and I get whiffs now and again of drugs. And I, you know, and I remember the people that died around me, and I remember the filth, and I remember the courts and the lies and the you know, partners crying, and my mum crying, and my dad crying, and all that. And that's what I remember. You know, I do not get this. Well, wouldn't it be nice to have one on the beach, a cocktail? Would it fuck? You know, it terrifies me. It was awful. I remember my using like it happened yesterday. And I think that that's the reason, that's one of the main reasons I stayed clean. You know, it really did finish me off. It took me to within a breath of death. And, you know, it doesn't hold anything for me, you know. And, yeah, yeah, I'm just so grateful. And when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, I didn't know what I wanted. I had no idea. I just knew what I didn't want. I'm just going to try and read these. I'm wonderful. And there's somebody here 3 days clean. That's I can't see. forgive me for not looking, but 3 days clean. Wow, somebody back and they've got 20 days. Abs fantastic. And that just reminds me of that. Of when I first got clean, I remember having 4 days clean or something, or 5 days clean. And I remember thinking, this is the best start I'm ever going to get. This is the best start to just put one day after another, after another. It's the best start because after 5 days, after 5 years, after 5 decades, you press that button and use, and you just go right back to the beginning. And it's like, this is the best start I'm ever going to get. I remember, and I still think that now, XYZ, 27 years clean. I wrote it down actually, the number of days. I've got a friend, he texted me every year, like the number of days. So on the 1st of May, so it was 9,000. 863 days clean, and that sounds like, I mean, it is a lot, of course it is, yeah, but in a big chunk, but it's just done incrementally, And in the chapter, What Can I Do? It says, put yourself on a minute by minute basis and not using. Minutes will grow to hours, will grow to days, will grow to months, will grow to years, and that's exactly what's happened. The bigger picture, none of us can see, but I'll just talk a little bit about the disease of addiction, and I carried that within me all my life, as I said, and my toy your toys were better than mine, your parents were better than mine, I wasn't good enough, I was undeserving, and of course I couldn't process this stuff at the time. I had no idea what it was about, and and then that grew up, that progressed into this, violent power that, that got me using, that got me involved in violence, it got me involved in theft, it got me involved in hurting people. We did many people great harm, but most of all we harmed ourselves, and I took the arse end of this. I was disgusted with myself, and I often hear addicts in meetings, it's just an observation, huh? And they say, when I was using, I didn't give two hoots of this and that. But you know what? I did. And I felt it. Every minute I compromised my spirit, I felt it. And, I often think, I remember once being in the shop and the voice is trying to get me to steal something. It's going, steal it, steal it, steal it. I'm going, my spirit's going, I don't want to, I don't want to, I don't want to. Steal it, steal it, steal it. And then, I stole it. And then I got caught. And then it'd say, you're a shit shoplifter. And it just turns it, it's just so insidious and spiteful, and it's awful thing to have. And it sets us up, and talk about powerlessness, and that's where I understand powerlessness over our addiction. And thoughts are uninvited. They're uninvited. I could not stop that thought that said steal it was inevitable, and in the same way I heard somebody say in a meeting, a newcomer, he said, powerlessness don't mean I can't use drugs, it means I'm going to. And that hit me like a ton of bricks. I couldn't stop using, and I couldn't stop that voice, and it was just, I was just living this life of disinformation and fear and negativity, and the more I'm trying to do to get out of it, the deeper it's getting, and the worse it's getting, and the more desperate I'm getting, and the things I, and that little quiet voice is going, shit, man, you don't want to be doing this. You don't, this isn't it. And I can't stop it. So I understand powerlessness, I understand being on the floor and being kicked and kicked and kicked and not being able to fight back or defend myself in any way. And I liken it, I liken the disease of addiction to like a bully. But when I'm on my own, it gets me. But when I stand with the other children in the playground, yeah, the bully's still there and he's coaxing me. He's, come on over, come and play with me. But the other children are saying, don't go, don't play with him. He'll do what he always does. And that's how I sort of like, I liken that, the disease of addiction and sort of like the fellowship of NA. And, as I said, the disease of addiction is just, that's what drove me to use all the drugs, drove me to behave how I did, drove me to feel how how I felt, and you know, and all the time in amongst this, you know, I could hear this little quiet voice that was sort of like, you know, really gentle voice, and it was ever so quiet. And you know, I got to Narcotics Anonymous, and you know, they spoke to me about the disease of addiction. And of course, I could identify that the people in NA were speaking what I'd felt and done. They were doing the same things. There was no reason to disbelieve them. And you know, the little quiet voice that just didn't want to be doing that stuff, you know, it got empowered by the people within NA, because you know, the nasty voice is going, you can't stay clean, you're nothing, you're shit, you did this, you did that, XYZ, you hurt him, her, them, you know. And but the people in NA said, yes you can, yes you can, and what's more, we'll show you how to do it. And for the first time in my life, the responsibility was on me, fair and square, and I felt it. Because up until that point, you know, it had always been the police's fault, my parents' fault, the school's fault, everybody else's fault except for mine. Yeah. And any sort of like agencies, institutions I've been involved with, it, you know, everything I did there was, it was all under duress. If you don't do this, then we'll do that, we'll stop this, or this will happen, or blah blah. And when I got to NA, there was none of that. Nobody told me what to do. They just said, you know, this is our problem, this is our solution, and we'll help you with it if you want it. And it was a program of attraction, not promotion. You know, I was excuse me, I was attracted to what the people in NA had, you know, and I wanted to be clean. As I said, I didn't know what I wanted, but you know, I knew what I didn't want. I just wanted to be clean. I just wanted to stop hurting myself and hurting other people. And you know, that quiet voice that was sort of like telling me not to do this and not to do that, even when I was using, you know, that is the voice of my second step. You know, power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity. You know, it never gave me any bum information, that quiet voice. It was always the voice of truth, but it was always overpowered or shouted down by the voice of addiction. And the people in NA, as I said, you know, they empowered that little quiet voice. And you know, with that, I was able to start believing that, you know, I could stay clean, I was worthwhile, I was, you know, and all the spiritual stuff. I could stay clean and what have you. And my third step was quite simply initially, you know, it said we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood it. I mean, I didn't even understand that at first. And I know turn means to just go in the opposite direction. So initially, you know, I just did the opposite of what my disease told me to do. You know, it'd say, don't go to the meeting. Yeah, so go to the meeting. Don't phone your sponsor. So I'd go and phone my sponsor. Incidentally, the guys who were just new in a sponsor is simply another recovering addict who's just got a little bit more experience with this. And I always like to use this minefield analogy that I came up with, and that, you know, life and recovery and stuff, it's like this big minefield here. And we start off at the beginning, we're terrified to step into it because we think we're going to get blown up. Yeah. But there's somebody 20 foot into the field, and they go, just turn right a bit and go left, and then just come to me. Come to me, come to me. And then he's listening to her, who's another 20 foot, and she's going, just go this way and turn right and turn left and come this way. Look, I've made it this far. You can do it. Yeah. And then, of course, sometimes people stop listening, and they go for a stroll in the minefield, and boom. And that's how I look at it. And it's you know, we're passing this experience down. So a sponsor is somebody who just helps us through the program, explains the steps, and yeah, just that's one special person that we can confide in. And you know, each person has their own qualities that they can give and that people are looking for. You know, you'd be the finder of your own sponsor on that one. But you know,
But I suck my dick, nigga, fuck my ass.
brilliant, brilliant. I like these Zoom bombers because at least they know we're here. And they come in and they, so in 10 years' time, they've got, God, I remember doing that in that meeting. I must get there and try and get off drugs. But there was a story, a guy in California, and he had this shop, a jewelry shop, and he was selling all his jewels and stuff. And his music player was left on the side. It got stolen. And he went to the meeting on the beach after he was sharing. He's going, someone's nicked me. Someone's stolen me music. I'm pissed off and this and that. Anyway, it turns out he was listening to a speaker tape. He was listening to an NA share. And a week later, a guy returned to his stall. He said, look, it was me that stole your music player. He said, I listened to that CD and he said, can you take me to one of them meetings? So you just never know how you're going to get this message. So I like the fact that they even know we're here because I didn't know about NA. I had no idea that NA even existed. For years I didn't. I'm just getting up for myself. See? And so, if it was just a 3-step program, I'd just do the opposite of everything I've ever done and everything would be happy. But it wasn't like that. It's a 12-step process. And I got to a point 2, 3 years in, and what it says in our books, feelings of anger and resentment and stuff that have no apparent meaning and what have you. And then I remember reading in our It Works How and Why, 12 steps, 12 traditions, about the 4th step. Our experience, this is a quote, our experience as a fellowship has shown that members who do not work this crucial step relapse. And I remember having done it, I'm just thinking, the gap between step 3 and 4 is littered with tens of thousands of dead addicts who didn't do the 4th step. Wait for Arafat to. So I did, it says we made a fearless and searching moral inventory of ourselves. And was a step four, yeah, step four.
What the
And
fuck? What the fuck?
basically, oh, here we go again. Arafat, keep coming back. So the 4th step, yeah, we made a fearless and searching moral inventory of ourselves. And I just did what it said. We didn't have that step working guide then. We had a little pamphlet called Working Step 4 in Narcotics Anonymous. And I did that. I just did it. I was fearless, but I did it anyway. The truth.
What the Sigma?
Can we get him off as well? I've never been bombed, and it's like, what's this? 5 in 5 minutes? I don't know. Anyway, but yeah. Anyway, so I did that. I was very frightened, but the people in NA again, they empowered that little voice, and was able to share that with another person, hear it from my own lips, and the God of my understanding, and something moved. I don't know what it was. I didn't get this pink cloud, but I got some peace. Got some peace. And I'll talk about sort of like the desire, the obsession to stop using, yeah. And that was lifted months before I stopped. I remember having some money one time, and I couldn't even be bothered to go and buy some drugs. I was that broken, and I'd had enough of it, yeah. And the desire, the obsession to use drugs, and I couldn't shift that. And then when I got to step, I'd done step 5 and I'd shared the exact nature of my wrongs. I saw like understood the exact nature of my wrongs. And I was then on step 6, was entirely ready to have my defects of character removed. And I believe that step 6, the surrender and becoming entirely ready, is exactly the same as the removal of the obsession to use in the 1st step. Yeah. I can't remove that judgmental and horrible behavior where I'm judgmental, self-righteous, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I can't remove that in and of myself. So, perhaps if this power that removed that obsession to use drugs, because I couldn't shift that. That is one of the biggest things in NA for me. Where did that go? Getting and using and finding ways and means to get more, live to use to live. Yeah. And I could not stop, and it's gone. And I'm sat here now with some money in my pocket, and I'm not dancing to a tune I don't want to down the street. How did that happen? You know, so I don't have a problem with the word God. I don't have a problem with a higher power, because nothing short of God is going to save me, and probably you as well. I don't mind speaking on behalf of you on that one. But and that so I just started to pray, and you know, and I became entirely ready, and you know, and I did a lot of crying, I did a lot of healing, I did a lot of everything, a lot of meetings, a lot of talking, a lot of this and that, and you know, and then I got to you know, have my shortcomings removed. Anyone struggling with that, you know, defect is the thinking behind it. So let's say, for example, self-righteousness, and then the shortcoming would be getting on my soapbox and telling everybody in the world how they should be living. So that's how I understand it. And you know, we get to the eighth step. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. And you know, I harmed myself. No, I said that wrong, didn't I? As we did many people. That was off the why we're here. Yeah, step eight. We made a list. Forgive me. We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And I put myself on top of that list. You know, I got the worst of it. And if I'm no good to me, I can't even make the amends anyway. You know, I've got to start being kind to myself before I can be kind to other people. And you know, step nine was just is making direct amends, except when to do so would injure them or others, and not going out and causing more trouble and admitting to loads of things that will just cause more hurt. And you know, a lot of my amends are ongoing, and they're indirect amends. You know, they're helping the newcomer. They're doing the right thing for the right reason. You know, they're being a part of the program. They're holding the door open for somebody. They're you know, just practicing spiritual principles. And you know, it's a massive step, and it's a lifelong one. And you know, the 10th step as well, you know, we continue to take personal inventory. You know, keep a check on it. When I'm in that minefield, I need to keep a check. I'll start wandering off. I need to know that that the guy is 20 foot in front of me, she's saying, Dale, that way. I'll just wander off on my own in a dream world, and boom. So I like the thing in the 10th step, and it says, we often find we've been doing better than we've been feeling. And there's been days where I've gone to the meeting, I've hated everyone, I've hated the world, I've hated myself, everything's shit, and this and that, the head's full of all sorts, yeah. I'm actually setting the meeting up, I'm giving a newcomer my phone number, I'm saying, oh yeah, I keep coming back, you know, didn't tell them what was coming. And I've just done the right thing, and mood follows action. I believe that mood follows action, and that you know, if I practice these things for long enough, then you know, it will become second nature. And which brings me on to sort of like step 11. You know, we sought for prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And you know, step 11 is our natural state. It's our natural spiritual state, where we're in the moment, spontaneous thinking and feeling human beings. And you know, I always remember something it says in the book. You know, I just quote the book, it's amazing. I've never stopped reading it from day one, and I still read it. But in the 11th step, and it works home why, it says God's will for us becomes our own true will for ourselves, and this happens in an intuitive manner that cannot be adequately explained in words. And it's just when something feels intuitive and feels right, and it feels peaceful. And you know, what do I consider prayer to be? A meditation. Now, yeah, I've prayed on my knees, and I've done meditation in the lotus position, but it has expanded much further than that. It is the word meditation is the quietness to just absorb what's going on, and to breathe in, to be inspired by people, to be inspired by life, to be inspired by nature, to be present. And prayer, what's prayer? So prayer is telling a joke, it's smiling, it's a song, it's a hug, it's the outward expression of the spirit. And this is my interpretation. In fact, you know, everybody has their own. It is the outward expression of the spirit, and it's all encompassing. It's just huge. And You know, step 12. Have I had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps? We tried to carry this message to addicts. Practice these principles in all our affairs. Have I had a spiritual awakening? I had a first spiritual awakening. I was about 30 days clean. I could smell bread. I walked past the baker's and it was the bread. I was like, wow. You know, and then I had another. I was about 10 days clean and I got a moment of serenity. And I was sat there and it was at night and the stars were out and it was really quiet. And I could feel the disease of addiction like pushing to get in. It was like prodding me and it couldn't get in. And I went, fucking hell, this is serenity. You know, I've had numerous spiritual awakenings. You know, I have cried a river in this process. I've laughed till I've been hurting. You know, I remember somebody telling me a joke. I was about 3 months clean. Somebody told me a joke. I had a laughing fit. You know, the drugs didn't kill me, but I thought this joke was going to. I just could not stop laughing. And I was just belly aching. And, you know, this journey has been. How long have I got left, by the way?
You good?
I'm good. Right. Okay. And this journey, it's been incredible. I remember something again. It says in the first step, you know, at the end of the first step, and I think it works how and why again, we will experience a full range about feelings about the events in our life. Good times will be mixed with wonderful, blah, blah. So basically, you know, we're going to get the whole shebang. So let me say, you know, I have had everything I've wanted. I've had everything I didn't want. You know, I've had loss, grief, you know, all these different things, and you know, I've had friends die, but friends in the program commit suicide and hung themselves, and you know, I've had depression in recovery. I really struggle with that, and you know, I've had everything what's in the dictionary, and I've had joy and happiness and forgiveness and serenity and peace where the hairs on the back of my neck have just stood up for no reason and I've just burst into tears. I've been so at one with everything. You know, I've been really blessed to be able to travel around the world and do lots of different things as well. And you know, I haven't done anything special. I've just kept coming to meetings no matter what. I've gone when I feel good. I've gone when I feel shit. I've gone when I wanted to. I've gone when I haven't wanted to. I've just gone to meetings. And when I'm in trouble, I pick up the phone and I talk to someone because I can't do it on my own. I'm powerless. I've got no authority. There's nothing I can do. And I have to get help from a power greater than myself. And I love this 12-step fellowship. I absolutely do. And I love all the people in it. And, you know, it's absolutely incredible. You know, we have these two things that define us. You know, there's the old saying, we come in on different ships, but we all end up in the same boat. And to all the different people, and you know, rich, old, fat, thin, young, old, poor, whatever, black, white, and it's just this real leveler, and it, you know, and it got rid of all the isms for me, and it stopped me pigeonholing people when I looked at all the similarities and not the differences, and sit to see there really is not much difference between any of us. That is absolutely amazing. You know, the word anonymity means without name. It's the wordless, faceless language of empathy. It's absolutely awesome that you know, somebody who from a completely different walk of life can touch your heart and can help you and can hug you, and you know, and you can help them too. And I think one of the spiritual principles of the program is, you know, giving unconditionally. You know, it says in the prefix of the basic text, proper service is doing the right thing for the right reason. I don't agree with that, mate. I just think just fucking do it. It doesn't matter what you're thinking, just do it. As long as it gets done. I've completely lost my chain of thought there, so I'm just gonna take a breath and get back on it again. Yes, thank you. Thank you, God. I normally sort of like do quite a structured share where I sort of like go through the steps and then I go through the traditions and I say thank you very much. But this one, I did sort of like 15 minutes meditation before and I said, God, will you just get me out of the way, please? And he actually feel like he has got me, he or she, whatever, God has got me out of the way because I have a gut in, like a twist and knot in my stomach. You know, when I'm lying or I'm trying to impress somebody or my ego's getting in the way, it just crunches up. Fuck it, I know I'm doing it. I still do it occasionally, but you know, and I haven't got that. And I was just thinking about sort of like, you know, the disease of addiction, you know, and this is the only terminal illness that we can walk and talk our way out of. You know, we survive it, you know, it's a cunning enemy of life. It's again, a destructive, violent power. And you know, I love this NA Worldwide Fellowship. I was 5 years clean. I can't remember, it was 5 years clean, and we had this link up for 50 years of NA. So anyone who doesn't know, NA was started in 1953 in California, and we had the 50th celebration, and we had this sort of like phone it, link it coming in, and people were phoning in. You were hearing like just for today from Peru, and then somebody from Australia had come in, and all this thing. And I just got this thing. I thought, this is massive. You know, we are the biggest organization in the world. There's nobody more. It's just everywhere, and there's more help in here than we can handle. We just have to ask for it, and it just blows me away. And that was 50 years. I think we must have just had 70 years last year. I didn't sort of like acknowledge it, I'll be honest with you. 70 years of Narcotics Anonymous. And we have grown. When I first got clean, there weren't that many meetings. And, you know, Hilmary spoke about meeting by mail. And that was my home group for 10 years. And what used to happen was we had this pamphlet called The Loner Staying Clean in Isolation. I don't know if we've still got it, but we had that. And what you'd do is you'd write a letter into the World Service Office, and everybody would write a share in or not, and they'd compile it into a pamphlet, and that gets sent out to all the members with addresses and PO box numbers. So you could share in and around the meetings. You know, you could share into it, and you could share to individual members, sort of like, and send letters. And, you know, Hilmary won't mind me saying, you know, she got clean. I sent her the Just for Today curing, the 30 days, the 60 days, the 90 days. And that's how I connected them. But through that, I got all these share cassettes. They were cassettes in them days. This is how long ago it was. And they were coming in from America and places of all these guys, who, you know, guys and girls who had long time clean. And we didn't know how to do it. We did, you know, we were very, and what used to happen in the area where I was, people used to get 2 years clean and they used to bog off to AA because they couldn't get a sponsor. They just couldn't go any further. But what happened was two or three of us stuck about and we stayed in this area. And when I left that area, we had three meetings in the prison. We were on our 10th convention. And you could have a sponsor with 8, 10, 12, 15 years clean. And Narcotics Anonymous was in all the little towns. Because when I first got clean, they weren't even in many of the big cities. You know, Birmingham, the second biggest city in England, only had one meeting. Leeds, another one. You know, and so it's grown massive. And I just think that, you know, every single bit of that, every single chair that gets put out, every single hug, every single reading, every single phone call that gets answered, every single, you know, all of it. I'm getting really emotional now. Everything is just makes up this massive picture that is like the miracle of Narcotics Anonymous. And I want to say thank you for a day clean and thank you for letting me share.